then red, and then pink. After a moment, it started to sparkle. I pulled the glass bottle off the top just as another two Cluricons entered the chamber, squeezing past to the single tentacle that still reached about the room. The tentacle wrapped around the metallic tub and squeezed. It crumpled like a beer can. Above, a glob of snot fell, splashing off my head and oozing onto my face.
You have been inflicted with the taint!
Damn it!
I really needed to start sticking my hood up.
Run! Toward the back of the room!
Behind us, the wall exploded, sending the lone bike flying. It shattered into pieces when it hit the floor. As I ran, I examined the smoothie in my hand.
Rev up immunity smoothie. One part moonshine and one part fairy, this smoothie offers 10 doses for the price of one. Each sip of this delicious concoction imbues the following effects. Temporary immunity to all health-seeping conditions and debuffs. Temporary protection against all communicable diseases. Inflicts the buzzed debuff. +3 charisma, -1 dexterity, +shaky cam debuff, +truth serum debuff.
I didn't have time to think about it. I took a sip. It tasted as if I'd taken a drink directly from the diseased asshole of an incontinent skunk. It took all of my strength not to vomit.
Stick it in your hot list and drink,
I cried, shoving it at Donut as we reached the end of the room. It disappeared from my hand. She didn't argue. She glowed as the potion took hold. A pair of icons flashed, indicating my immunity. The taint debuff didn't go away, however, which meant I couldn't heal myself. But at least now I couldn't be inflicted with the death measles or whatever it was called.
Death measles, I heard myself say as I ran. Now that's funny.
It wasn't funny. I laughed again. What the hell is wrong?
Ow!
I cried as a rock bounced off my head.
My health flashed, my bar moving further down than it should have.
I'd been hit with a damn slingshot, and the damage was enhanced because of my stupid goblin tattoo. I was woozy, and I realized it was the buzzed debuff.
Whoa.
I had to consciously keep myself from falling over. If this was buzzed, I'd hate to see what the shit-faced debuff felt like. I pulled an angled, still intact section of the redoubt from my inventory, putting the shield up as we reached the back corner of the room. 5 tentacles smashed about, and a pair of Cluricons rushed at us, both of them shooting rocks, which pinged off the steel table.
What's your mana?
I asked.
16!
Donut cried, her voice slurred. She popped up and fired a missile at a Cluricon. She hit him in the shoulder, but he still went down.
Now 12! Die, motherfucker, die!
I barely had time to parse that Donut was also drunk as a screaming tentacle smashed against the table, rocketing us both against the back wall. My health, already in the red, moved further down. The monster didn't seem to realize what it hit. I watched as it grasped on the last standing Cluricon, wrapping around him. The mouths stopped screaming, all revealing long, sharp teeth as they pulled the shrieking monster back into the boss room, chewing. It returned a moment later, blood dripping from the mouths, which resumed their caterwaul. 4 more Cluricons rushed into the room. Another tentacle emerged, pushing through yet another hole in the wall. This tentacle was different. Instead of mouths, it was covered in hundreds of tiny little orifices. The longer, thinner arm reached into the room and made a psst-psst noise, like a spray bottle. A fine green mist filled the chamber.
You've been infected with the vigorous measles! Infection negated due to immunity.
Don't fire any more missiles,
I said. My head swam.
If we die, I want you to know that I love you, Carl. I don't love you as much as I love Miss Beatrice, because she's my person. Or as much as I love Ferdinand, but I love you.
Focus, Donut,
I said. I tried not to let what she'd said sting, but it did. Who the fuck was Ferdinand, anyway?
B was giving you up, Donut.
She was giving you up, trading you in for a younger model. But I didn't say it. Not out loud. Now was not the time for that conversation. Never was the time for that conversation. Not anymore. But especially not now. Not when B was fucking dead.
See that Cluricon there?
I said, pointing a shaking hand.
Raise him from the dead!
2 of the Cluricons running at us cried out as they were picked up and crushed by their own boss. I leaped up, stumbling away as yet another tentacle reached for me. I ducked, and it sailed past. I was suddenly on the ground. When I ducked, I just kept going down. I pulled myself up and kept running. I formed a fist, and I rushed at the two remaining monsters. I kicked one, who went flying, and then I drunkenly swung at another, connecting with his giant head with a right hook. I pulled back, an ear attached to my spike. I dropped to the ground as a tentacle swooped over my head. Ahead of me, a Clurricon zombie rose up, groaning.
"Tell him to hold this over his head and run into the boss chamber,"
I cried. I pulled a boom jug from my inventory as the zombie stood there, swaying, looking at me. For good measure, I pulled the most stable stick of dynamite I had and shoved it down his overalls. Probably a bad idea, I thought, right after I did it. Oh well. The zombie grabbed the jug on Donut's instruction and held it over his head, like that guy holding the boombox in that Say Anything movie. I lit the torch and sent him on his way. He turned toward the doorway, which was currently empty, and he ran. He barely missed being swept away by another tentacle, and he reached the door just as a seventh tentacle broke through the wall and five more Clurricons emerged, who all stared, unmoving, at the zombie rushing right at them. They moved out of the way, uncomprehending what was happening. I turned in the opposite direction and ran toward our small shield. I dove behind it, barely dodging another tentacle that swooped right over my head. As I jumped behind the metal shield, Donut yelled,
"I thought you said the explosion was going to be too big to use it in here!"
I looked at my health, already perilously low. Donut didn't have a scratch on her. I pulled the alchemy table out of my inventory, putting it directly over us, placing us within a clamshell. I felt as if I was going to vomit. My head continued to swim.
"It probably is, and I'm probably about to die, but I think you'll be okay."
"Carl, no, no!"
"It's okay. Go back to Brandon. They'll watch over you."
I wrapped myself around the cat.
"I don't want to do this without you. Carl, I lied before. I won't be fine on my own. I need you. No, no!"
I couldn't answer her before the explosion came.
Chapter 35.
I wasn't dead. I was deaf. I was blind. I was in a fuck ton of pain. I couldn't feel my legs. But I wasn't dead.
I gasped for air. My health indicator blinked, the lowest it had ever been. My eardrums had been blown out. My entire face felt burned, my eyes included. The pain was overwhelming, like hundreds of claws pulling at me from different directions at once. They were still pulling, ripping pieces of me away. The taint still had a minute left before it would run out. I wasn't out of danger yet. I could feel Donut standing on top of me. I could feel the vibration of her voice. She was shouting, pawing at me desperately.
"If you're saying something to me, I can't hear you,"
I said, shouting the words. Donut.
"You have to stand up. The room is on fire. We killed the boss. The door is open, but the fire is getting closer. Hurry."
I can't. I think my legs are broken. I can't feel them.
I pulled up my health UI, looking at the damage to my body. The entire pie chart was blinking red, all except my feet. My health was at 6% and still ticking downward. I was bleeding internally. I had third-degree burns on my face. My legs were broken where the table had smashed into them. A moment later, I felt myself moving through the debris. I realized it was Donut, dragging me by my cloak, pulling me from the room. My whole body screamed with pain. A blinking message warned I was about to pass out.
Donut.
"Carl, you need to work on your cardio. You are much heavier than you look."
10 seconds before you can heal me. Get scroll ready," I croaked,
as darkness descended.
I awakened, my body screaming. I felt everything inside of me repair itself. Donut had used one of the healing scrolls, possibly at the last possible second. I jammed down on my healing spell also, which sped up the process. I felt my hearing return, my sight restored. The burn on my face smoothed out. I didn't move for several moments, sitting there, staring up at the ceiling of the hallway.
You saved me again, I said to the cat, who sat next to me, desperately cleaning herself. I still didn't dare move, not trusting the bones in my body not to break again.
That's what I do,
she said. Donut.
I don't want to say this out loud, but our views went way up. Isn't it great?
I groaned, rolling onto my side. My one-armed jacket was now scorched to hell. My cloak and other magical items didn't have a scratch on them. I looked down at my toes, and they sparkled.
Ugh, I think I was saved by that damn pedicure kit. The table should have severed my feet right at the ankles. Instead, it bounced off and broke my legs.
I would have bled out.
The fire in the expanded boss chamber eventually died off, leaving nothing but melted slag. We wandered in. The alchemy table I'd used as the top part of our shield was undamaged. The other table, the redoubt piece that I'd used here as a shield, was now shattered and scorched.
Huh. Weird, I said.
I touched the alchemy workshop table, and it was cool to the touch. I pulled it back into my inventory. I had two such tables now, designed to be placed inside of personal spaces. This one and the engineer's table. It seemed they were indestructible. This was a bug I could exploit. I couldn't say anything about it, though, not out loud.
Had the table's invulnerability saved us?
I was going to need to pay attention to the nightly list of patch notes to make sure they didn't fix this one. In the meantime, I'd use it to our advantage. The ductwork on the ceiling hung in tatters, a few pieces still clinging to the chamber by braces. The severed, skeletal remains of tentacles lay scattered. The ground was hot to the touch. Donut jumped to my shoulder.
Ooh, let's get the neighborhood map, I said,
hesitantly moving toward the main boss chamber. I cringed, afraid we'd find more dead babies. I shouldered past the long, crumbling skeleton bones to behold the lair of Krakaren.
It smells like that time you tried microwaving fancy feast in here,
Donut said.
I was drunk, and you ate that shit right up. More tattered ductwork filled the room. There had been banners on the wall, but I could no longer read them. I didn't see anything that could be construed as baby skeletons, which was a relief. Dozens of Cluricons had been in here, along with a few splatters that might have been Laminac fairies. The mechanical remains of a moonshine still sat in the corner, like I suspected, but it appeared the machine was much smaller than I had guessed it might be. It was probably why I was still alive. I'd assumed the thing to be huge and explosive. The remnants of copper tubes snaked from the machine to the main, dead body of the Krakaren monster. She'd been huge, 20 feet tall at least, an immobile, octopus-like creature. Her stinking dead body leaned against the back wall as we stared at it. Half of her head was burned away, but it seemed she had a beaked mouth and a group of eyes. Black streaks ran down the massive corpse like running mascara. She stank of rotting seafood. They'd taken some sort of cosmic octopus creature and combined it with your average suburban anti-vax let-me-talk-to-your-manager-mom. At least that was my impression. The door on the outside of the room, this whole ridiculous storyline with the MLM moonshine certainly made it seem that way. But there was more to it, too. I suspected the Krakaren Collective, or whatever they called it, was a real thing. Sort of. This whole time it had seemed they were just combining absurd stereotypes from Earth with random monsters just to fuck with us. It came to me now, as I stared up at this thing, that they were doing the opposite. After all, this was all really for the benefit of the audience, not us. They were taking something familiar to the viewers, like these interstellar dumbass octopus monsters, and combining them with an Earth analog in an effort to both teach the watchers about Earth culture and to lampoon interstellar cultures and creatures they felt deserving of scorn. Kind of like the way cartoonists would sometimes personify rats and snakes as scumbags, or foxes as shady used car dealers, or Persian cats as princesses. A massive cage filled half the room, still intact. The creatures within had mostly burned to slag, but I could see that it had been filled to the brim with brindle grubs. They were all dead.
We never got to see the boss up close,
Donut said,
as I moved near enough to loot the neighborhood map. Something tells me this isn't the last time we'll see this one, I said, as the twists and turns of the neighborhood populated onto my interface.
Ah, fuck.
What?
Look at the map. At least 50 red dots filled the area, all of them slow-moving. Brindle grubs. It was like they could sense a battle, and they converged on an area. Killing them wasn't a problem. They didn't fight back. I could literally run over them and kill an entire hallway of them in seconds. But that was a lot of them. A whole lot. I planned out the path to the tutorial guild. It wasn't far, just a few hundred meters away. Let's go talk to Mordecai, I said.
That bitch really said that,
Mordecai said, outraged, after I told him about Odette's offer.
She wants me to seek her out? I would rather spend another 2,000 years in this room than exist in the same solar system as her. I'd rather meet a woman, sire children, and then devour those children than have anything to do with her again.
So, that's a no, then?
Donut asked. Mordecai was no longer a rat hooligan. He'd shapeshifted into a much larger, hairier, and obsidian creature called a bugaboo. He was like a bear with no neck, with enormous, owlish eyes and comically skinny legs. His long arms were also absurdly thin compared to the rest of the 7-foot-tall creature. He looked terrifying and cartoonish at the same time. I'd almost punched him right in the face when we first entered the room. It took a solid 10 seconds for me to realize that this was still Mordecai. I examined his properties now.
Mordecai, Bugaboo, level 50, guildmaster of this guild hall. This is a non-combatant NPC. You know that creepy, unkempt guy who lives on the corner? He doesn't seem to have a job, has a van, hangs out at the park with a pair of binoculars? Yeah, you get the idea. Solitary monstrosities that never settle in a single place, bugaboos may be found anywhere on the dungeon's lower floors, often lying in wait for crawlers to pass by so they can jump out and do things to them. They'll tell you they just want to cuddle. That's probably a lie.
That's, quite the monster they chose for you, I said. Mordecai nodded.
These guys are pretty depraved. They have them on the first and second floors, but the third floor will be filled with them. Don't wander near alleys at night.
At night? I asked. Mordecai waved.
I can't tell you about that.
I looked up at him, but he winked at me. I understood. So, Odette. You don't like her? Is there something we need to be worried about? Mordecai took a long, deep breath.
Odette cares about Odette. She is smart, she is cunning, and she is more self-centered than that thing at the center of the galaxy. But her current gig, it is perfect for her. She can be very useful and helpful to you. Until you're not.
It's funny. That's pretty much the exact same thing she'd said about the game's AI. I didn't say that out loud. If she invites us back on the show, should we go? I asked. Mordecai grunted.
Oh, you should go. Her program is one of the few I would recommend. Not that they'd give you much of a choice. Speaking of shows, there's someone who wants to speak with you. I've been asked to ping her once you showed up here. She'll arrive in about 10 or 15 minutes.
Another show?
Donut asked. She'd just started combing through her achievements and boxes. She didn't seem to have gotten anything noteworthy except one item. Her boss box contained an enchanted fur brush of the Ecclesiastic that worked in a similar fashion to my pedicure kit. As long as someone brushed her for 10 minutes every night, she'd receive an extra 2 points to her constitution for 30 hours. It was better than nothing, but even with the buff, her constitution was only 4.
She'll explain who she is when she gets here,
Mordecai said. He leaned forward and whispered in my ear.
Do not upset this woman. She has a lot of power over your fate.
I swallowed. I had a feeling this wasn't going to be a good thing. I have several questions, I said, settling into the chair. Mordecai settled uncomfortably across from me. Before, the chairs had been too big for him. Now they were too small.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
You said it'd probably be 10 days, but it's 6.
Is that a question?
Mordecai asked. He shrugged,
This is the first time I've ever seen it lower than the maximum. The minimum is one day longer. They gave a reason in the last announcement. That's all I can say about that.
Mordecai lifted his eyes, looking up at the ceiling. Can viewers see us in this room?
Yes. Like I said before, the only place they can't follow is in restrooms. They can only hear or see you, however, not me. Only those with press credentials can see or hear me. Those like Odette. Most people know this and only watch if you have a good loot box to open.
Shit. I hadn't thought about that. Before, Mordecai had been more forthright, but we also hadn't been under a crazy amount of scrutiny either. Getting straight answers out of him now was going to be more difficult. Do you know who Damien is? Mordecai looked as if I'd just slapped him.
Who told you that name?
He hissed.
Did Odette tell you about him?
Whoa, I said, holding up my hands. Not Odette. It was a mob. A fairy. She called for him just before we killed her. Mordecai relaxed.
Those damn fairies. They're always getting themselves in trouble. Damien is a location manager. Each city area has one. There are only three for this floor. He is my manager's manager. You're not supposed to see or know about him. I'm only allowed to tell you about this sort of stuff if you ask directly.
We spent some time talking about the borough boss fight and the last fight with Crackheron. I asked him what her weakness was, and he smiled, telling me he wasn't allowed to say, which really told me my theory was correct. It wasn't the last we'd see of that particular boss. I asked him about Agatha, about them editing her out of the boss battle. He waved it off.
They probably didn't want to confuse the narrative.
Again, I could sense there was more there. I tried not to let my frustration show. I told him my theory about how they were combining real aliens with Earth stereotypes. Mordecai looked equally frustrated. He paused, as if thinking hard.
That's mostly correct. Again, it's not really something I can discuss. But this isn't exactly some big secret either. Some of these monsters are made by AI. Some are simply the actual creatures from their world. The Tusklings and the Ball of Swine, for example. And some, like you've deduced, are created by a team of writers. Like with anything that's been put together by a team, what you end up with can vary wildly. Those llamas, for example, they are unique to your planet, and I don't recall anything in your culture that suggests they should be anthropomorphized as drug-dealing gangbangers. Someone just thought it'd be an interesting combo. Not everything will be social commentary.
It's usually just stupid.
It's entertainment, Mordecai said,
once again reminding me of something Odette said. There was a much deeper story there between those two. I wondered if I'd ever learn. Also, I've been meaning to ask you about this tattoo on my neck. The Desperado Club.
Nope. Off limits. You'll learn about the third floor soon enough. Sorry. Now, you better open your boxes before Zev gets here. Once she's here, the cameras will turn off. Cameras will always turn off when Kuateen are around.
Shit. Okay, I said, opening up my folder. My IED and explosives handling and several other explosives-based skills had leaped to 7 thanks to my creation of the Carl's Jugaboom. I also received a pretty strange achievement.
New achievement! Dungeonpreneur! You have invented a stackable weapon, device, or potion. You will be memorialized for eternity with your name in the Dungeon Codex. Just don't let it go to your head, Elon. Reward? For every kill made with this device by other crawlers, you will receive a single gold coin. If you survive the dungeon, you will continue to receive this benefit, even during future seasons, at the current gold-to-credit exchange rate for the remainder of your natural life. Our lawyers made us put that last part in, but between you and me, we both know you're going to die, and we're going to keep using your hard work for our own benefit.
Interesting. It was too bad nobody else would ever use these things. The main ingredient, the jug of moonshine, was probably pretty rare, and those jugs were more valuable when they were left unaltered. I received a bunch of the usual stuff, plus a couple hundred gold coins, bringing our hoard to just over 1,000 coins. I went over it all,
more potions and torches and biscuits. I had enough food now to feed an army for a month straight. I received a couple goblin boxes and took in more dynamite, smoke bombs, and lighters. I received a bronze crowd control box and added 2 scrolls of confusing fog. This time, I would give them both to Donut. I opened the boss box.
Don't say anything.
Don't say anything out loud. I couldn't help it. I looked up at the ceiling.
Really? Fucking really?
Behind me, Mordecai laughed. But a moment later, he added,
Whoa, that's actually a really good prize.
It was a white pair of boxers covered in little red hearts.
God damn it, I muttered as I examined them.
Enchanted big boy boxers. Have you ever read an Incredible Hulk comic and thought to yourself, everything rips off of his body except his pants? No way. Well, spoiler alert, you're not wrong. Size-altering and wear creatures, such as the big boy, are required to wear enchanted, self-sizing items lest they wish to turn the dungeon into a nudist colony when they transform. That means everything they wear requires an enchantment. Everything, including their naughty little undies. +2 to Constitution. Wearer may cast a level 15 protective shell once every 30 hours.
Don't look, I said, and I pulled my scorched and threadbare boxers off and slipped the new ones on. The old ones fell apart in my hands. The first thing I did was open the spell menu, find protective shell, and move it to my hot list.
Protective shell! Picture yourself in high school. Now picture all the girls who would never get anywhere near you. It's kind of like that, but on purpose. Cost? This is an item-based spell. This spell does not require mana to cast. If you unequip the associated item, you will lose access to this spell. The cooldown will not reset. Target? A 3-meter radius sphere centered around the right hand of caster plus 50 centimeters of radius per level of intelligence. Current radius? 4.5 meters. Duration? 5 seconds plus 1 second per level of spell. Current duration? 20 seconds. Requires 30-hour cooldown. A favorite of frontline tanks and castle guards, the expensive and rare Protective Shell spell shields the caster and anyone within the sphere from a mob's physical presence or physical attacks. This spell does not protect against magic or against non-corporeal entities. Unlike the more popular Shield spell, this spell does not move with you. This spell's area of effect remains static once cast, unimpeded by your physical surroundings. So, if you use this spell only when you really, really need it, you're probably only delaying the inevitable by a few seconds.
I had that spell during my crawl, Mordecai said. It saved me more than once. It has a fantastic secondary effect. Since the spell doesn't move once cast, you can-
Warning! You may not wield your weapons while in the presence of admins. Any attempted violence against an admin will result in your immediate execution.
The stern message came out of nowhere, and it was spoken in a different voice than any one I'd heard before. Like with the boss battles, it wasn't voiced in my head, but over an unseen loudspeaker. Donut immediately jumped to my shoulder. There was a loud pop, and a new creature appeared in the room, standing in a puddle right in front of me. A Kuateen.
Chapter 36. All of my menus disappeared. My entire HUD snapped off. It was just like it had been when we'd been transported up to the production boat floating on the surface. I just stared at the person, uncomprehending for several seconds. Are you kidding me with this shit? It was a Kuateen, a female Kuateen. An actual representative from the Borant Corporation. I remembered the massive carving of the fish creature on the doors, and I compared it to this beast. Before, I'd seen similar sea creatures in the audience at the taping of Odette's show. I now knew that those were not Kuateen. Those people were very different.
and while the gigantic relief carvings on the doors did an adequate job portraying the aquatic race's features, it left one important detail out. This Kuatine stood about 2 feet tall. She was barely tall enough to reach my knee. I examined the woman's properties.
Zev, Borant Corporation Assistant Communications Representative. This is a dungeon admin.
That was it. No additional information. No snarky AI talking about mudskippers. It took me several moments to take in her outfit. Zev looked like an astronaut from a 1950s sci-fi comic. She wore a round, glass helmet filled with water. A pair of tubes snaked from the back of the helmet to a bulky backpack. The water bubbled like she was in a portable fish tank. The rest of her humanoid fish body was hidden inside of a white, mesh spacesuit. The whole getup was half space age, half old-school deep-diving suit.
Good evening, ma'am,
Mordecai said, standing straight.
Hello, Mordecai,
the fishwoman said, her voice amplified through a little speaker on her outfit.
It's nice to finally meet you face to face.
There was something about the woman that suddenly made Mordecai visibly relax, but I couldn't tell what it was. There might have been an exchange I couldn't hear. I just didn't know. Even Donut seemed to notice. The cat kept looking back and forth between the tiny fish and the large guildmaster.
Ma'am, I must say, I haven't seen one of these water suits in centuries,
Mordecai said, walking around the woman.
Most Kuatine wear rebreathers around their necks. You can barely see them.
I've been assured the armor of this device is second to none. If one of my fellow employees wishes to enter this godforsaken place without any proper armor, then that is on them.
Ma'am, I don't want to sound rude, but can you move in that thing?
Mordecai asked.
No,
she admitted.
Not really. If you must know, this is my first foray into a dungeon, and I want it to be safe.
So, you're really here, I said. I resisted the urge to reach down and tap on the glass.
Yes,
she said, looking up at me.
Other corporations may utilize hollows for their training guilds and admins, but Borant prefers a more fins-on approach.
You know you're in no danger while you're in a safe room,
Mordecai said.
The mobs know not to attack you, and the AI negates all attacks inside of safe areas. Unless you're planning on going for a stroll, ma'am, I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, well, tell that to those 12 workers in site prep. Did you see this morning's update? They were swallowed whole. Or that human admin who didn't realize the no urinating in the dungeon rule applied to everyone? They said all that was left was splatter on the floor.
I had no idea what was going on with this exchange, but Zev seemed to realize she was talking in front of a pair of crawlers. She returned her gaze up at us.
Anyway, I wanted to do a meet and greet with you two,
Zev said.
This will only take a quick crutch of your time.
I don't know what that means, but go ahead.
My name is Zev, and I work within the Borant Corporation's communications department. I'm a liaison between Borant and privately owned and operated programs who wish to borrow crawlers for their shows. We have identified several individuals and teams who have gained early popularity, as is probably no surprise to you. You two are on that list.
On my shoulder, I felt Donut's claws sink deep into me. The cat was shuddering with pleasure. We've already been on one show. Dungeon Crawler After Hours with Audette.
Yes, I am aware. Certain production companies are allowed to pluck crawlers away between stairwells. But if they want to transport crawlers to their sets at any other time, after boss battles, for example, they must arrange it through our office. Usually, these requests are granted automatically, but once crawlers reach a certain level of notoriety, the number of requests can become a bit overwhelming. We generally don't want our crawlers to leave the game more than twice a floor. As you've already received over 24 interview requests from this most recent boss battle alone, you have automatically been entered into the crawler-assisted outreach program. In other words, you've been assigned a PR agent. Me.
You're our agent? Our PR agent? You get us gigs?
Donut asked, voice full of wonder.
That's right,
Zev said.
From now on, All interview and panel requests will filter through me. I've opened up a special chat channel so I can send you messages through your interface.
Zev looked about distastefully.
Also, they make me come down here and talk to you directly after interviews for a debriefing.
This is absolutely fabulous,
Donut said.
Can we provide advance riders, like with makeup and green room requirements?
How about a more important question? Can we refuse interviews? Last time we didn't have much of a choice. She nodded.
I will always ask you before whisking you away, but...
She leaned in, and her entire outfit creaked ominously.
Audette has already contracted with our office. She gets first right of refusal for each floor opening. You're already locked into those interviews, and as long as you keep your numbers up, you will go on her show. That means I'll try to schedule one additional interview for each floor down. You can refuse what show you go on, but I'm afraid you'll be obligated to pick something. We might move to 3 interviews for the lower floors, depending on how it's going and whether or not the party keeps insisting on accelerating the game. And if you survive, of course. But whatever happens, I promise I will do my best to get you quality gigs.
What about now?
Donut asked.
Do you have something for us now?
Yes. There are a few options, but for this first one, I went ahead and chose a program for you. It's a little less serious than Audette's show, but it will hit a demographic that you aren't yet trending in. Plus, it's a roundtable-style discussion, and in this program, all crawlers get a parting gift. Sometimes it's a joke, but it's usually something useful.
A gift? Carl, we get a gift!
Wait, are we doing this now?
No, I'll ping you when it's time. It'll be at -6 +1 full.
Minus what? I said.
I felt a sudden, unexpected wave of rage at the fishwoman. It came out of nowhere, and I didn't know what set it off. She's just a goddamned pawn like everyone else. It's not her fault. Still, I couldn't help it. She was a Kuatine. The enemy. The real enemy. And I couldn't do anything about it. Take a deep breath. We don't understand your time reference. She sighed.
6 hours before the next recap episode. Not the one tonight, but the next one. So, in about 40 hours. Since you'll be doing your Audette interviews between floors, I figured it'd be best to schedule your second appearance right in the middle of the floor's timer. It'll keep interest up. Also, you should try to line up a major boss battle right as the floor closes like you did last time. That really worked in your favor.
That rage, which I thought I had successfully held back, bubbled up and out. God damn it.
God fucking damn it!
I said. Mordecai raised his hands in alarm, rapidly shaking them, trying to get me to stop. I didn't care.
We are quite literally fighting for our lives here. We are not willing participants, and I'm getting sick of pretending we are. We are going on these fucking interviews not because we want to, but because we have to.
The fish looked up at me through her helmet, eyes wide.
Zev? Ma'am? Whatever the hell I'm supposed to call you so you don't send a lightning bolt up my ass, I don't want to get in trouble with you or Boren or the Syndicate or whoever else is running this bullshit. I am doing what you have asked. I am killing monsters, trying to level up, trying to survive. I will smile, and I will joke, and I will put a proper face on when I go on these shows. But fuck! You have already taken everything from us. Do not ask us to give more than what we have. We're not going to fight or survive on your schedule.
I sat there, my chest heaving, glaring down at the fish. The world seemed frozen. Mordecai looked terrified. Donut, who remained on my shoulder, butted her head against the side of my own. She purred, a deep, silent rumbling. Her reaction surprised me, but not as much as Zev's reaction.
Look,
she said after a moment.
I know. Okay? Nobody in this room is an idiot.
She pointed at Mordecai.
The moment I appeared, he was terrified of me. Once he saw I wasn't wearing a party badge, he relaxed. When I'm done here, I go back down to the production headquarters, and I will have to face my boss, who is a member of the party. If I do or say the wrong thing, my entire family will be wiped from the universe. You're going to go out there and face mobs who know people like you are prowling the halls, trying to find and kill them. They, the sapient ones, they live in constant fear of you guys. We are all parts of the same inexorable machine. All of us are afraid. Yes, your place in this really sucks. It's not fair. You know it. I know it. The cat knows it. But believe it or not, I'm on your side. The better you do, the longer you survive, the better I do. So when I tell you that you should do something, you best listen, because I know what I'm talking about.
Nobody moved or said anything for several seconds. We just stood there, looking at one another.
This is just like that scene in season 3 of Gossip Girl, when Chuck and Blair break up over the hotel,
Donut said. I turned to regard the cat on my shoulder, and I burst out laughing. I couldn't help it. It wasn't funny. I'd never watched that damn show. Yet I laughed, and I had a hard time stopping.
No, it's not,
Mordecai said a moment later.
How do you even get that from this?
Zev turned her fish gaze to my cat, then Mordecai.
I can't believe it. You two have watched Gossip Girl? Nobody on my team has watched anything except that old show Cops and Judge Judy. We've been stuck here for 15 solars with nothing for entertainment but Earth-based programs, and I've had nobody to talk to about them.
Oh, honey,
Donut said, jumping down from my shoulder to sit next to the fish.
I have seen everything. Season 5, the car accident.
No, stop. You're going to make me cry,
Zev said, waving her fish arms. I thought, fish can cry? They started rapidly talking with one another about the show. Bea used to sit up and rewatch the series over and over again. She'd clutch on a donut and sob every time.
That was dangerous,
Mordecai whispered to me as Donut and Zev continued to talk.
She's about as low level as you can get and still be an admin, but you need to control your temper. She has the power to end you. All Kuatine are dangerous. Party members are not.
What the hell is the party? I asked, also whispering. We both took a few steps back. He was right about my temper. I rarely lost it, but that didn't matter right now. This was a rare opportunity, the ability to talk to Mordecai with nobody else listening.
It's a political party. They're called the Bloom. Now everyone just calls it the party. Ultranationalism. The closest thing you have in your history is maybe Axis Japan with a good splash of Nazi Germany thrown in. But even that's not quite right. When I signed my indentureship contract, the Bloom represented less than 15% of the votes. Now they control the whole Kuatine system government. They've run it into the ground. The whole system is bankrupt. They've recently started requiring all Kuatine to wear a badge indicating if they're members or not.
Jesus.
Listen carefully,
Mordecai said, looking nervously down at Zev.
We don't have time to get into the details, but Borant is being forced by their own government to end the game as quickly as possible. You need to be especially careful not to upset them.
I don't understand, I said, alarm rising. I thought they started it early to stave off a bankruptcy seizure action or whatever. That's what Odette implied. Wouldn't they want to keep it running as long as possible? He nodded.
That's what everyone thought at first. They're doing a cash grab with the new patron system, but they don't get that money, or any money, from the advertising or the tourism funds or elite monster sponsorship or anything else until the season is over. They need that cash as soon as possible, but they also first need to raise enough. Their whole system is balancing on a wire. They need the game to be entertaining and profitable, but they also need it to finish much more quickly than usual. The committee has already issued a warning, putting Borant on notice over the, bugs that keep occurring, like the issue with the bathrooms and the overpowered mobs. One too many violations, and Borant could lose everything. There are protections in place, plus there is pushback within the company itself. But the Kuatine government is working extra hard to get you killed.
That's just wonderful, I said. Zev looked up at me, as if surprised I was still in the room. Mordecai saw this and took a few steps away.
I think it's time for us to get back out there,
I said to Donut. We need to finish clearing this quadrant out,
and then we need to escort Team Meadowlark to the stairs. I want to get it done before the next recap episode.
We will talk more later,
Donut said to Zev.
Or we can talk over chat,
Zev said.
The fish's demeanor had completely changed.
Tell me you've watched Riverdale.
Donut gasped.
Nope, I said, reaching down to scoop the cat up. You two will talk all night.
Oh, wait, One Crutch. I have to leave before you can,
Zev said as I put my hand on the door handle to the dungeon.
It's the rules. I'll ping you regarding the next interview.
And without further fanfare, she disappeared with a pop. Water splashed over my feet as she disappeared. There's more I want to discuss, I said to Mordecai. All of our menus snapped back on, the HUD flickering like a booting up computer. I pulled at the door. But it is getting late. We'll be... I trailed off as I glanced at the mini-map. Why had the map changed color? The door opened all the way, and a waist-high pile of grubs fell into the room. Chapter 37 Mordecai shrieked in rage.
Out! Out of my room!
He kicked at the monsters, punting them like oversized footballs out into the hallway.
Gah!
I cried, jumping back. Weren't they teleporting away?
They won't until they attack,
he said.
Not on their own, at least.
He was scooping them up by the armfuls, tossing them back out into the hall. But it was useless. For every two he tossed out, four more got in. Eventually he gave up and slammed the door, trapping several dozen in the room. He waved his hand, and they all disappeared. He wiped his hands on his fur.
Ugh. There.
There were hundreds of them in the hallway. Thousands of them. I just stared, dumbfounded. They kept coming and coming. They're following us, I realized. Where the hell were they coming from, though? Up until now, it had seemed all the dungeon's monsters were preceded. Once we killed all the monsters in an area, that was it. The area was safe. These guys were being spawned somewhere nearby. They had to be. I leaned against the door and zoomed out the map to view the whole neighborhood. Thousands more of them were crawling their way toward us. They seemed to be coming from the south, from a direction we hadn't yet explored. The hallway with the stairs wasn't yet infested. But it would be soon. What the hell is this? I asked Mordecai.
I've never seen anything like this. Not on the second floor,
Mordecai said. His eyes had gone glossy, which I recognized as him searching through his special menu.
Yep, as I suspected.
He looked at me, his shaggy face looking grim.
They're being spawned.
Yeah, no shit.
Every floor has a waste disposal system. So far, you've seen rats and the grubs. The more dead bodies they eat, the stronger they get. It'll be something different the next floor down. They're supposed to home in on corpses, but if none are nearby, they'll hunt crawlers. That's what they're doing. These guys don't attack, but they'll still swarm at you.
But why are there so many of them?
It looks like the system is spawning anywhere between 1 to 15 of them when a corpse is created. It usually doesn't do that unless there aren't any janitor mobs nearby. You killed a lot of mobs in that last battle, so here they are.
We didn't kill that many. Plus, we've been destroying the corpses.
They probably had a couple hundred grubs in that cage in the boss room,
Mordecai said. He paused.
Yes, there were 750 of them. All fried. Plus, you killed another 85 Cluricons between grinding away in the boss battle. Destroying the corpses only keeps them from leveling up. It doesn't stop them from being generated. You, my friends, have been set up. You've fallen into a trap. Good news is they're easy to kill. The bad news is these little buggers don't give any experience. At least not the level 2 ones.
Wait, this even works on themselves? So for every grub we step on, 15 more will appear?
Sort of. There's a per-quadrant limit. If you kill all 5,000 of the grubs out there, 75,000 aren't going to appear.
Do you know what the limit is? I asked, looking at the map. The entire area blinked red, centered on us.
Yeah. You've already hit it. It's 5,000.
Fucking hell. Is it like this everywhere? Across the whole dungeon?
It looks like it,
Mordecai said.
It's to keep people from camping out in one area for too long. As long as you keep moving, it shouldn't be an issue.
Carl. Brandon, can you see this?
We'd set up the chat, but we hadn't really used it yet.
Brandon, Ann. Loud and clear. You guys doing okay? Carl. We have an issue. It's not a huge deal yet, but it will be soon. Let's get your folks moving toward the stairs now. We'll meet you in the hallway outside this quadrant. Brandon, Ann. 10-4. We're on our way. Wait until you see what we built. They were barely 3/4 of a mile away, but with that crowd, it'd take a couple hours at least for them to get set up. Come on, Donut. We need to carve a hole back to the other team. At least these bastards are all the level 2 grubs. Even Donut cringed the moment I said that out loud. We started by tossing firebombs in the halls, then moving forward. But after a while, I realized it was just a waste of good moonshine. The level 2s by themselves were literally harmless. I could pick one up and put it on my lap, and it didn't do anything. They were large with scary-looking mandibles, but they didn't bite or attack or anything. They just sort of squeaked and wriggled. And for everyone we killed, we were just generating another. Plus, if we didn't properly destroy the body, we were increasing the chance of getting these guys to level up. The problem was they were so thick in some places, it was impossible not to step on them with my bare feet, crunching them down. I tried my best to avoid them, but for everyone I killed, I smeared down with my foot, crunching until the X went away on the map. The moment it died, its friends all turned on it, taking bites from its body. Even when I completely destroyed it, they continued to chew and lap up the remains. I took that as an ominous sign. If I had to step on more than 2 or 3 grubs in a hallway, I tossed a boom jug in behind us. Better safe than sorry.
This is taking forever.
Donut complained from my shoulder.
We're almost there,
I said, pushing a grub away with my foot. This last hallway was mostly clear, only 40 or so of them. Brandon and crew were making record time, he said. They were almost at the rendezvous. Once we hit the main hallway, we were all going straight to the stairwell. I plotted a path starting a few alleyways north, so we only needed to get them through a pair of grub-infested intersections. As long as we moved relatively quickly, this would work. And once they were down the stairs, we'd carve our way north, punching back into the neighborhood with the danger dingoes and kobolds. From there, we'd head back to the safe room, watch the evening's show, sleep, and then hop on the chopper and spend the rest of the time grinding away in different neighborhoods until it was time to hit the stairs. Hopefully we'd find a different exit. But if not, we'd come back and firebomb our way to the stairwell here. Donut.
Carl, people are getting bored with this. My followers haven't gone up in 5 minutes.
Carl. For fuck's sake, Donut. Don't worry. I'm sure something awful is going to happen any second. We exited out into the main hallway. The moment we did, the grubs behind us seemed to lose interest in following. They just stopped, settling down. It was creepy as hell. I saw the wall of blue dots coming down the hallway. It looked as if it was all of them, so we went jogging toward them. I stopped and laughed the moment I saw the parade. Imani and Chris were both wearing leather straps across their chests that I recognized as pig harnesses from the Tuskling courtesans. They strained as they pulled all the others behind them. They'd built a parade float. That's what it looked like. They'd taken the wheels from multiple wheelchairs that no longer had owners and affixed them to long pieces of wood. I had no idea where the wooden platforms had come from, but I knew Imani and Chris both were as obsessive about looting everything as I was. Using some of the goblin tools, they'd hobbled together the contraption. Looking more closely, it was more like a train or a set of roller coaster cars. There were a total of 39 people being pulled, most of them sitting upon their own chairs, which sat locked in place, 2 by 2. The ones who normally used walkers sat cross-legged on the boards, watching wide-eyed as they were pulled along. The giant centipede was 10 cars long, and each section held 4 people. The individual cars were attached to one another by a set of glowing metal chains. The same chain attached Chris and Imani to the rest of the train. It seemed it was one chain, running from Chris, through all the cars and back up to Imani, about 300 feet long.
"It's more maneuverable than it looks,"
Brandon said, jogging up.
"We made it from the safe room to the hallway easily. Chris says once they get going, he barely feels the weight. The only problem is that the cars are too wide to fit through the safe room doors, so we have to stage it all in the hallway. There were a lot of those grubs, but we ran right over them."
"Where'd you get that chain?"
"Imani had a scroll called Yogg's Special Chain or something like that. She just got it from some gold box. I don't know what for. She could pick any length up to something crazy, like 1,000 feet. It's light as a feather, but the chain only lasts for 30 hours. This whole thing was her idea, though Brandon designed it. He even added ramps so they can get on and off easily."
"Hey, you have an extra star by your name." He nodded.
"You know the mind horrors? The floating brain things? Yolanda, Chris, and I went to clear them out. I remembered what you said about needing to train, so I figured we better. Yolanda would shoot them from down the hallway, deflating them before they could hurt us. The boss room was this abandoned warehouse thing. The boss was a giant blimp. We took it out pretty easily thanks to Yolanda. That's also where we got all this wood."
"Did it come out of its room?" I gave him a quick recap of what had happened with Crack Heron.
"Christ, dude. Our boss battle was much easier. It never left his lair."
They were lucky to be alive. But I was glad they'd spent the time training themselves. Yolanda was level 9, equal with both the brothers. Imani was still level 11, and she didn't have the extra bronze star. "Imani didn't go with you?" I asked.
"No. Someone had to stay with the residents."
"Any sign of Agatha?"
"Not a one. But with these grubs, I'm not surprised. They devour everything. We saw a few level 3s on our way up here."
"Yeah. We need to get moving," I said. I pointed to an alleyway.
"Guys! Down that way!"
I called to Imani and Chris. They nodded and turned.
"I see a safe room down that way. What's in there?"
Brandon asked. "I don't know. We haven't checked that one out yet." This hallway was only a few meters from the edge of the quadrant. It bordered the one with the kobolds, who we hadn't yet seen. I kept a wary eye out for dingoes. Some of the residents clapped their hands with delight as we turned into the hallway. Mrs. McGibbons, the one who earlier wanted to watch divorce court, looked down at me as they passed. She was on the very last train car, this one only carrying 3 riders. She was the only one on the platform in a wheelchair. The other 2 were men with walkers, both sitting down. The name over the woman said, "Crawler number 12,330,800, L. McGibb."
"Hi, Carl."
"Hi, Mrs. McGibbons. You remembered my name today," I said, moving to walk alongside the train.
"This reminds me of the Tunnel of Love. Back in my time, my Barry and I used to always go to the carnival. We'd eat the cotton candy and throw darts at the balloons. We'd go in the Tunnel of Love. Back then it was a boat. I'd let him touch my boobs, but only on the outside of my sweater."
I laughed.
"I loved my Barry, but he wasn't the prettiest man to look at. If you were in the Tunnel of Love with me, I'd have let you do more than touch them on the outside of my clothes."
thank you. I couldn't think of a better response. The old woman cackled. Behind her, Yolanda barked with laughter.
"You've been hit on twice now,"
Donut said.
"Once by a meth-addled goblin shaman, and once by Abraham Lincoln's grandmother. I can't wait to see who you attract next. 5 gold coins says it's some sort of bog witch with a beard."
Yolanda had told me earlier that this woman was 99 years old. I looked up at her. 99 years. She'd lived an entire life. Had a husband, whom she'd clearly loved. It seemed obscene that she'd be here in this place. I thought of the others who'd spent their final hours in a safe room, singing. We should have made them all stay. This isn't a kindness, keeping them safe. Donut jumped from my shoulder and landed on the woman's lap. The cat's crupper and butterfly talisman jingled when she landed.
"Oh, hello, pretty kitty,"
the woman said. She started petting the cat. Donut purred loudly.
Bring that pussy over here!
One of the men said. He laughed, lewdly. The man seemed even older than Mrs. McGibbons. He wore a Bengals hat too small for his bulbous head.
Don't be crude, Jack!
Yolanda said. I moved forward to walk alongside Brandon, Chris, and Amani, keeping my eye on the map. Yolanda kept up the rear, walking with her bow at the ready. We're taking a left two intersections down, right past that safe room. We'll have to cross through an infested area, but I'll firebomb it. The mass of red dots was already starting to shift toward us. Thankfully, they were painfully slow. I could take a nap before they'd reach this hall.
Carl, thank you,
Brandon said.
You're helping us to your own detriment. You're a good man.
I smiled. If we get to the point where we don't help each other anymore, that's when we stop being human. I felt something catch in my throat, and I coughed. Zev, admin. Carl, that was great. Can you say that for me again, but this time don't cough? I stopped dead. My neck tingled with goosebumps. I knew we were being watched and followed, but having someone actually comment in my mind was one of the most unnerving sensations I'd ever felt. Carl, are you kidding me with this? No, I'm not going to say it again. Have you been watching this whole time? Zev, admin. You and my other clients. This Save the Elderly storyline is playing great with most viewers. That said, about 20% of the focus group thinks you're wasting time and being stupid. Dead weight, I think, was the term some of them have used. But most of them understand what you're doing. Donut is right, however. It's a little dry. Maybe you can... Oh, shit. Oh, fuck. Carl, Donut, run. Run to the safe room now.
No. Jack! Jack! No!
Yolanda called. I turned to see Jack, Cincinnati Bengals hat sitting cockeyed on his head. He'd stood to his full height, using the wheelchair with Mrs. McGibbons and Donut as a brace. His pants were down to his ankles, dick out, pissing directly on the wall.
Chapter 38.
The next several seconds seemed to happen in slow motion. Donut was the first to react. She jumped up, claws out, as if she meant to decapitate the elderly man. She pulled back at the last moment, instead pushing off his shoulder and sailing through the air, flying until she landed three platforms down. Yolanda also reacted, just a fraction of a moment behind Donut. She didn't pull her attack. An arrow sprouted from the side of Jack's skull, pinning the hat to his head. She'd been forced to shoot him. But it didn't matter. She'd reacted too late. The now dead man fell off the trailer into the ground, still pissing in death. The curved pee stain on the dungeon wall started to sizzle and boil. Smoke rose directly from the point of contact. I realized I was running toward the back of the train. Behind me, Brandon shouted. The safe room was only 100 feet away. Chris and Amani were already picking up speed. The second man on the last car, Randall, went flying off the train as it lurched forward. He hit the ground with a loud, painful crunch, his walker flying over his head just as the monster appeared.
Holy fuck!
I cried.
Donut, run!
I continued to sprint toward the thing. Purple and black smoke kept hissing and spitting from the wet stain on the wall. The monster coalesced, coming into existence 10 feet behind Yolanda and Randall, just above the prone form of the now dead Jack. Yolanda hit the monster with two arrows, and the shafts just shattered against the smoke. It didn't even form a health bar, indicating she'd done no damage whatsoever. The thing was 15 feet tall and just as wide, made of fulminating, sizzling black and purple smoke. It had 6 legs, each gleaming with obsidian claws the size of rakes. The claws seemed to be the only corporeal parts of its body. The legs were all the same, but the 2 forward claws were longer, finger-like with extra joints. A flickering horned skull sat amongst the smoky mass, its eyes made of glowing red fire that poured smoke. It was the skull of some sort of animal, maybe a colossal badger, but with curved, goat-like horns. It roared, and the ground shook.
Rage Elemental, level 93. The first recorded summoning of a Rage Elemental, blah, blah, blah. If you're reading this, you likely don't give a shit about the monster's rather interesting and tragic history. You're probably running. It's not going to matter. The almost indestructible Rage Elemental is said to only dissipate after it has claimed 666 souls. In other words, you are fucked. Absolutely bite the pillow fucked.
A magic missile bounced off the monster's head, and a health bar appeared for a half second before disappearing. It's self-healing. I came skidding to a stop as the train rocketed past me. Donut landed on my shoulder. She was screaming something about not running unless I ran too. Yolanda stood over the fallen form of Randall. The creature was still growing, the last of the black and purple mist twirling around it.
Fog!
I yelled. Donut, who had read my mind, activated her scroll of confusing fog at the same moment. The monstrosity finished forming just as the wall of fog billowed into the hallway. The creature fell to all six legs. The monster spun toward us, impossibly fast, its movements cleaving through the cloud like a boat cutting through waves. It ripped at the dead form of Jack, and the man's body shredded. It leaped forward, clawing at Yolanda and Randall. I never got to know Yolanda Martinez as much as I would have liked to. But I didn't have to know her very well to know who she was. I knew she was a quiet, sweet woman who'd been a nurse her entire life. She'd worked 60 hours a week for years to pay for her son to go to college. Her husband had owned a landscaping company. At only 4'11", the woman had a presence much bigger than her stature suggested. There was a warmth about her, something I'd never felt as a kid. Just being in her presence imparted a feeling of longing in me, something difficult to describe. Like I wished I could relive my childhood. But this time, I'd have her as my mother, and she would have never, ever left me. When the apocalypse came for Yolanda, she didn't once waver in her dedication to her patients. She was quick to laugh, quick to smile. And even though Yolanda Martinez was just as terrified as the